Hello, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Welcome back to Aces Up the Sleeve. I am Patty, co-hosting with the co-managing partner of Pocket Aces Racing, or par for the quick reference, Jared Shoemaker. And today we are joined by Jackie Romero Mirage, who you many of you saw his interview on YouTube. He has become something of a YouTube celebrity on our channel. So far, he does have the interview with the most viewer counts. So you guys really, really liked him. So we thought, let's bring him on the podcast. So in this podcast, in this episode, we're going to shed light on all things Pocket Aces. We're going to talk about the finer points of syndicate ownership. We're going to discuss what you all, the partners, the fans, the listeners, have asked us to talk about. And since we are industry participants, we are going to touch, sometimes we're going to touch base on what's going on with the industry at large. But before we jump into this week's edition, let's just, you know, get our hellos and good days out of the way. So Romero, if you want to start, how are you doing today? And thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. It's all awesome to be on a podcast. Just got up to Saratoga a couple days ago, so just settling in. Exciting for what the meet holds for not only myself, but for all of horse racing. So, you know, we're always excited for Saratoga. How are you guys doing?
Fabulous on this end, and I'll be headed up to Saratoga on Saturday morning myself. I'm going to do a quick up and back up Saturday morning, and I'll be back in Lexington by 10:30 Sunday morning, so... just going to come up for the Saturday and you know, not to get this off on the wrong foot, but you know, hopefully we beat you on Saturday afternoon. but maybe we'd like to see you run a very close second. How about that?
That's okay. We'll see what happens. Oh, that's going to be a fun race because I know Dave, which we're good friends with, he also has Magical Ways and Irish Aces. Then he also told me that, well, if none of my horses win, I hope you win. I'm like, okay, I don't win. I hope one of your horses win. So right. Got some friendly fire going on.
Magical Ways can heck with that. We're, it's us. It's Irish Aces or it's you.
Okay, perfect. That sounds great. I like that.
Well, thankfully, I'm not going to be the one who has to tell Dave that. So, Dave, we love you.
Dave will know. He'll know soon enough.
Oh, we always love Dave.
Yep, absolutely. So as I mentioned above, in this week's edition, we're going to sit down with Romero. We're going to talk a little bit about what got him into racing, because I'm going to kind of hit some of his experiences as a younger rider, as an up-and-coming rider. And at the end, he's going to answer some of the questions that you all have sent in. So we'll just kind of start with the background, the little introduction that we kind of start with everybody is, what got you into racing?
And real quick, you know, so you've been doing this for what, 6 years now? You started in 2018?
Mm-hmm. Give and take about 6 years.
Right, thereabouts. Okay, so go right ahead then. Just wanted to set that little background.
Yeah, so I got into racing. My whole family's into racing ever since I was a baby, like even before I could even walk. It was always like a dream to become a jockey. So that's pretty much my background in racing. But to be honest, as I got older, I was playing other sports, soccer specifically, and I got a bit on the heavy side. When I was 15 or 16, if people asked me if I was going to be a jockey, I would say definitely not, because I was on the heavier side. I did want it to ride, but I didn't think I could have actually have done it. And then I lost a lot of weight playing soccer, and then I pursued my dreams of becoming a jockey. So my whole family is into racing. My older cousin, Raj, I'm pretty sure he's probably won races for you guys as well. Mm-hmm. Big poker player. And he's our family's most successful person in racing. He's won races all over America and all over the world, honestly. And then have uncles, cousins, my uncle Aubrey, my cousin Rico, my cousin Shamir. I have my uncle Colin. My dad was a jockey. So much people in my family, an endless amount of people. It's just like I couldn't get away from racing, honestly. My family leaps and breathes horse racing, so there was no way that I could have gotten away from horse racing.
So now, most people that have been around racing for any length of time are familiar with Rajiv. But what about the rest of your family? Do they race in North America? Are they in other parts of the world?
Yes. So Rajiv, he's doing the Fox Sports, the broadcast now. But I have my uncle Aubrey. He's in Florida. My cousin Tony, he was riding in Florida briefly as well. My cousin Shamir, he works up here with Rob Falcone, my cousin-in-law Sebastian. He's an exercise rider. Rajiv's younger brother, he's galloping horses, probably going to start riding races within the next 2 months. He's 21 years old. My uncle Bongo, his name is really Alan. He's 65 years old, and he rides occasionally. Whenever he feels ready, he'll just lose some weight and go ride races in Jamaica and sometimes at Gulfstream. It's actually
That's
the most
crazy.
thing. Yeah, he was the oldest jockey to ever win a Jamaica Derby, and he won it like 2 years ago, which was insane.
Wow.
Andre Ramji, he's recovering from an injury that he got about 10 months ago riding at Charlestown. He's a jockey as well. And honestly, if I don't nail any of my family, that's what I could think of right now. My cousin Rico, he's a trainer as well down in Florida. So it's I have so much family in racing. It just like it's very clustered in my brain because they're all just in racing.
Yeah, that's just, I mean, you're it's just ingrained in the entire family. That is so amazing. So what's it like when and maybe you haven't done this a whole lot yet, but what about what you know when you are in races with your relatives?
Oh, it's the most hilarious thing. I'm gonna be honest with you. The first race I ever rode with Rajiv was in Saratoga in August of 2018, and my horse was about it was a very like a big long shot, I believe like 45 or 50-1. And I'm in the jock's room and I'm watching over some replays, and I look at Rajiv and I say, "Hey man, I really think my horse has a chance." And his horse was like one of the picks of the race. His horse was like 4, 5, or 6-1. And he's like, "Man, you know, just enjoy Saratoga, ride the best that you can, and you know, try to hit the board." I lit up the board. I won the race. I paid like 90 something dollars after the race, dying laughing. It's like it's so much friendly competition. I really like it because I, for one, I love to trash talk. So I love to just get under my family's skin, especially when we're competing against each other.
That's great. That is
Yeah.
so good. So now, did you start off in Florida?
Yes, that's where I started off riding races.
And then you're in New York year round now?
Yes.
All right. So what drew you to New York, and why New York is the home base? Just out of
Well,
curiosity.
so when I started riding, I spent the first 8 months in Florida, and then I got hurt, so I was out for a year. And then when I started back riding, I spent about 3 weeks in Florida, and then I quickly moved my tack to New York. Because I got hooked up with some bigger connections, good outfits to ride for them. And then I rode for New York. Sorry, I rode in New York for about 3 to 4 weeks. And then racing got shut down when COVID happened. I'm not sure if you remember that. Got shut
Oh,
down for 3 to 4 months.
vaguely.
And then I got going within that 3 to 4 weeks. Like my business really started rolling. I started winning a bunch of races. And then racing got shut down. Then I rode New York and Jersey for the next 6 to 8 months. And then I moved back to Florida for about a year and a half or 2 years. And then I was in Florida. I was very happy. You know, I was with my family, but it just wasn't where I wanted to be in my career. Meaning, I feel like New York is probably one of the best places for a young rider. When I moved back to New York, I was 22 to just build a name for myself. And I want to ride big races. You know, like that's one of my goals is to ride big races, win grade ones hopefully in the future, and just improve on my riding. And I think New York is probably the best place to do that for, you know, a younger rider, you know, just trying to build and trying to do the best for himself. That's my perspective on it.
I mean, it's a tough jockey colony, and you know, same in Kentucky. You know, I know it's, I mean, man, the biggest names that there are in the game, they're up there, they're in Kentucky, and you know, Florida for the winter. I mean, talk about, you know, I guess maybe you had a little bit of advantage because of your family, but talk about being a young jockey and trying to break in, and you know, because there's so many guys and gals that are great riders or good riders, but there's only so many horses. And it's got to be just really, really tough. And it's got to be mentally draining at times when you know you've got the talent and you know you've got the goods, but you can't get the mount. So just, and you know, I don't think you're getting plenty of mount. So that's not, you know, you've overcome that. But just talk about just, you know, breaking in and being that young jock in the jock's room and being out there and scrambling for mounts every day.
For me, I when I came to New York, I came with the mentality that it's not something that's just gonna happen overnight. It's really a slow grind. Everybody has their people that they ride for. They have their horses that they've been riding. So the only way to really pick up my business is to actually just ride the best that I can. If I'm not on the best horses, just try to get the best placing. Even if I can't win, try to get second, third, or fourth, which can help me get into bigger and better outfits and ride better horses and, ride more live horses. And that's what really helped me. It's just mentally, sometimes it's unfortunate when you don't win a race for a certain period of time, but the main thing is just really just making sure, as like for me, I'm young, like you said, and upcoming. So my whole thing is just every day just really working on my riding. I understand that, some days I'm gonna have more mouths than the other. And sometimes I might get taken off of horses just because of, the connections or whatever it may be. And, it's just I have to live and die by that. That's how the game is. And every day I just want to improve, become a better rider. And, it's like one step at a time. If you look at a big mountain, it might look intimidating from the bottom, but if you just look at every step by step, look at it every step by step and take the small steps, it's not intimidating it at all. So that's the way that I look at it. It's just a slow grind over time. And, most of the riders that are at the top right now probably had to go through it. So it's just a sacrifice and just have to rough it out. That's the way I think of it.
How many horses do you ride typically in the mornings?
Every morning varies, but Friday, Saturdays, and Sunday mornings, usually I'm working at least 3 to 4 horses minimum on those mornings because those are the busy work mornings. Monday, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, I'll probably have one, two, or three that I have to go in and work that are probably going to run the next week or so. But it's a bit of a sacrifice because my family's in Florida and I'm in New York. So even if I have to work one horse on Monday, one horse on a Tuesday, one horse on a Wednesday, I can't leave. So
Right.
the main thing. I just have to be there every day. And even if I just work one horse, I have to go and see all my people and, keep checking in and stopping by and building relationships. That's a key part of the business as well.
I would say 95% of the casual, oh shoot, maybe 90%, 99% of the casual racing fans have no idea of that aspect of your job. It's, the going and building relationships is what I'm talking about. Typically it's, they show up, maybe they ride a few in the mornings and then they show up in the afternoons and they go ride the horse. But yeah, talk to a little, yeah. I mean, you spend most mornings just walking around the grounds,
Yeah.
going in and checking in with people, right?
Yeah, that's how it honestly is for the most part. You go around because it's not only that you're just riding these horses, but you want to make sure that the connections and everyone really is comfortable with how you're riding their horses. You want them to be comfortable with you riding their horses. That's, the most part. And also building these relationships will help you get into bigger barns or just ride more horses. So for me, it's great to just build relationships and just keep working at it, to be honest. It's a big part of the job, especially here in New York. I've seen a lot of mornings, like even some mornings I don't have any horses to work, but I still go in and I check in with my people because I just haven't seen them for a few days. I'll just stop in and check in on the horses. How did they come out of their races? And just different things like that.
Yeah. How much time, and I'm sure this varies probably from rider to rider. I think some probably more serious about it and some less. But yeah, how much time do you spend? So you're on Roos this weekend. How much time do you spend watching his races leading up to this race? Or do you ever go back and watch his
Roost.
previous races? Yeah, Roos.
Like for the most part, honestly, like a lot of these horses, especially in New York, since I've been here for such a long time, I'll probably go back and watch one or two replays of Roost. But I've won him. Sorry, I've rode him a few starts, and I've won
Right.
on him. Not the previous start, but the start before that. So I know the horse pretty well. I'll just take my time to look over the race and see what plan A, plan B, and plan C is. But we can always have plan A, plan B, plan C. But sometimes when the gate opens, every single thing changes. You have plan Z, you know, so that's one thing. I always try to study, know the horses that I'm riding against, know the riders I'm riding against. But it just it's horse racing is just full of so much variables, so
Right.
much different can happen in the race. It's just experience helps a lot.
Any riders that you just when you see them in your race, or you see that they're in the gate next to you, that it just kind of makes you roll your eyes a little bit and say, "Oh, geez, not this guy, not this girl."
No, honestly, I'm happy with the riders that I ride against. You know, they're all I respect all of them. You know, this whole Saratoga jockeys colony, it's like star studded. You know, they're
Oh,
great.
absolutely.
You know, but I respect all of them. But like, I'm competitive. You know, I want to win every single race. I think I could beat them every if I get a live horse with every chance. You know, so. My whole thing is just to do the best that I can, and I'm just not really intimidated by anybody. I just want to go out there and do the best that I can.
So Dave Brown sent me a question that he was, wanting me to ask, and I've kind of thought about this myself. So this is not exactly what Dave asked, but we all the time hear after a race, especially like a horse we've put on the dirt, and maybe it's a young horse or a new horse that we've got, and they're like, "Oh, he ran okay on the dirt, but man, he feels like a turf horse, or he's going like a turf horse." What for our people, and we put that in our updates about horses all the time. When you're on a horse on the dirt and you think it needs turf, what are you feeling? What are you what is signaling? What's the signal to you that makes you think this horse is not a dirt horse? It needs to be on the turf, or this horse may be okay on the dirt, but it's going to be a hell of a lot better if we put it on the grass.
For the most part, there's many different signals, by the way. One of them could be horse not taking so much of the kickback. One of them may be that the horse may be traveling nicely the whole race. You think you have a ton of horse, and then as soon as you let them go at the quarter pole, they just completely drop the bridle and they just start struggling over the track. That's one of the main ones. Another one is could be a horse just simply just not getting over the track at all. They're just spinning their wheels, as we call it. They're just not getting comfortable over the track. And it's something more of feel, and a horse can fly me, meaning that their stride is very high. So there's so much. That's the best of my explanation that I could give verbally, but it's mostly a feel kind of thing.
Okay. So you can actually feel, it feels very different riding on the dirt and riding on the turf. Right? And even right, we talk a lot of times talk about a heavy dirt track. It's kind of how what feels different, just the way they're hitting the ground, the how they're you
Yeah.
can you actually feel them, you actually feel them losing traction when you're standing there spinning their wheels.
Yeah, you feel them struggling over it for sure on a deeper dirt track. And like a faster, you'll feel them just gliding over it. It could be a horse that might be a bit far back, but they're getting over it much easier than, you know, a really slow, deep, tiring dirt track. You could definitely feel the difference.
Okay.
Like even we work horses at Belmont on the training track. If we work in company, after the work, we'll be like, oh, the track was slow today. The track was fast, or the track was very fair, you know? So we can feel it for sure.
Yeah, and I ask that because I appreciate you giving the detailed response on it, because we talk about that with our partners so often, and emails that we send out, or explanations that we're offering for this or that, and I sometimes wonder, do they think we're full of it? Because they're like, that's a horse, it's running over the ground, it can't be that different. But it truly is. The surface can make all the difference in the world for every horse in the race. And as you're saying, one day to the next, one day it's heavy and slow, and the next day it's fast, and that completely can change how a given horse gets over the ground.
Yes, for sure.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit more about your experience. Again, we said you've been doing this for around 6 years, but you've been in the industry, basically you've grown up in the industry. But talk about some of your favorite, personal favorite races, some of the ones that just when you think back over the last 6 years, what are some horses that stand out, or some races that stand out to you that just make you kind of give you the warm fuzzies as you think about it,
I always remember my first stake winner, a bit special, and I won a few stakes on her as well. So I remember like all of those races very vividly, just
And what was her
because
name?
a bit special,
That's
a bit
special.
special.
Well, that
Yeah.
is special.
Yeah, she was very nice. She was 5 for 6, and the only race that she lost, I was a bug boy and I messed it up. We lost by a neck. No, sorry, a head, and I completely I butchered that race so badly. And I love that filly because Patrick Biancone, he's a trainer that I rode all of his horses in Florida. I messed it up, and he told me the only reason why I got to ride her back is because I messed it up so bad that it can't get any worse, so I'm gonna ride
It couldn't have
Yeah.
been any worse, but you only got beat by a neck, so we'll give you another shot.
Yeah, so I got to ride her back, and I believe I won 3 stakes in a row on her. And when I messed it up, I was only riding for 4 months, so I give myself a little bit of leeway right there, and then I won a few stakes in a row on her. She was like one of my favorite horses just because of her temperament. She was just a sweet filly, and she just always knew where the wire was. She was just so talented.
So what was your how long did it take you to get your first win?
Oh, I won the fourth race that I rode.
Fourth race that you rode.
Yeah.
What was that horse?
The horse's name, it's on the tip of my tongue. Wow.
That's okay.
I had it.
I figured that'd roll right off.
It was for Charles Simon. I remember for Tropical Racing. Oh my gosh, I
Okay.
just had my first winner. I remember it was a number one. He's a chestnut horse. I rode him right back after for Charles Simon.
You'll think of it later.
Yeah, it for sure it will come back up. Wow, I can't believe I butchered that.
So other than the races that everybody says, Kentucky Derby, blah blah blah. If you think about one race that you'd like to win, but again, not one of the Triple Crown races, not the Breeders' Cup, but just a race that stands out to you. That you'd love to actually get a win in.
Wow, that's actually a great question. Would the Florida Derby count?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Florida Derby, definitely,
Okay.
because I grew up 15 minutes from Gulfstream, and I went to the Florida Derby growing up as a child, like just so much times. So that would be like winning a grade one in my backyard. That would be like the most amazing feeling. And probably all my family would be there.
Yeah, that's great. No, I mean, because that, and I think that's that home track, Gulfstream Park, the home track. Anytime for me, I grew up, 10 minutes from Keeneland. So for me, winning a race at Keeneland is the most special thing in the world. Whether it's a $20,000 claimer or a graded stakes, anything I win at Keeneland is great. So I totally can relate to what you're saying about winning the Florida Derby would be, just would be
Yes,
fantastic. So,
1,000%.
outside of Gulfstream and Saratoga, because we know that those are kind of your homes. What tracks have you been to? Have you ridden at that you really really like? Or is there a track out there that you haven't run on yet that you'd like to ride?
So Monmouth is really nice. I've been to Monmouth. I spent last summer there. But I also never been to Keeneland. Never been to Keeneland, which is pretty insane. I would love to go there, ride there, and win races there, hopefully.
Okay,
Yeah, it's definitely mine.
so what you have? So if just Keeneland is again. That's when all the biggest names and riders they converge on the place for 3 weeks. What's it take to get you there? I mean, do you have to have two or three mounts lined up, or hey, somebody calls you up. We got a maiden special, and he's a long shot, but we'd love to get you to come down. Does that get you on the plane?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, whichever that it would take. Again, my agent makes those decisions, but I'm pretty sure one stake would get me out there for
Gotcha.
sure. Get me out, but he makes those decisions. I remember,
And you and I talked about that before we started recording, the agent. So I want to jump into that some more. How much of a role, how big a role does the agent play in the mounts that you take for our
huge.
people that just may not know?
It's huge. For the most part, the agents basically book us on the horses, and if he has two or three horses in the same race, that asks for our feedback. But in the end of the day, the agents make the decisions. For example, this weekend he told me that we have a couple horses that I'm gonna be riding on at Saratoga on Saturday, but I was also offered to go ride some stakes out of town this weekend, but he chose to stay in Saratoga just because it's our main base and we really don't want to miss any live horses here because New York is our main base. If you step out, those horses are just going to be gone in any second because Saratoga, everybody's hungry, everybody wants to ride, and it's the worst place to lose horses, especially in the beginning of the meet because it's going to be so hard to get them back. So the agents make all of those decisions. They're going to get our feedback for sure. But in the end of the day, we pay them to just get us on the horses and make the right decisions. And if they don't make the right decisions, for me at least, I just say that it's okay. We all make mistakes. If you pick the wrong horse, it's okay, because I know the agents, they always have the rider's best interest. They want you to ride the winner, so it's not like they're trying to ride the horse that lost. They want to ride the best horse that they can. So if they don't pick the right one, then it is what it is. We move on and hopefully we'll win the next one.
Yeah, that's the last thing that the agent wants is for you to not win because then they don't get paid as much.
Exactly.
You're not racing. You got a day off. You've been to the track and you've made your rounds. How do you like to spend your time? Watching races at other tracks, or you got other things you're into?
I have a whole bunch of stuff that I'm into. Like I love playing soccer. I love playing poker. I go for runs. I went for a run earlier, to always keep my weight down and stay fit as well. I'm probably gonna play pickleball after this interview is done, after the podcast. So there's a ton of stuff. I have family that's in Saratoga that's here for the meet that I'll probably go spend time with. So I have a ton of other things that I like to do. My cousin Rajiv, he lives in Florida for the most part. Since I've been in New York for the last 2 years, he's been in Florida, and we're rooming together. We rented a house together in Saratoga, so we're gonna be spending a lot of time together, playing probably video games or doing other stuff, whatever crazy stuff we decide to do. So
That's great.
playing soccer is probably one of my favorites.
Okay, very cool. So now this is one question that I ask all of our guests. So imagine for a minute that you are king for a day of North American racing. Granted, we all know our industry has it's great. The racing is great. We all love thoroughbreds and what we do, but we got issues too. There's always things we can fix and make better. So you're king for a day in North America racing. What are one or two things that you would change?
I'm not sure. For me, like I've always had this, not always, but this is something that I thought about for the past couple of months, right? And I'm not sure if I could change this or if I was king, I could change. But I feel like something that I've seen is that sports betting in the United States have become popular within the last maybe 2, 3 years. But before that, before sports betting was popular, all these other sports, soccer, basketball, football, they were already big. They generated so much revenue just because of people loving the sport, people wanting to go and just go to football games, go to soccer games, basketball games. They just went to these games for entertainment. I feel like if we can change the dynamic of horse racing, meaning solely relying on horse racing's revenue of just gambling and actually viewing horse racing as a sport more than just a gambling product, I think that will be that would help us a lot. That would help enhance the sport just because now we've opened a ton of doors where you're not heavily reliant on gambling and it's just more of an entertainment product, and people will genuinely just love horse racing for horse racing more than just the gambling. That's just something that I perceive, and that I could be wrong, I could be right, I'm not sure, but I feel like perceiving horse racing as a sport more than just a gambling product will solve a ton of problems.
I like that. It's great. And the sport in general, and I used to actually teach classes in sport management at a university. So, sport is a spectacle, and so much of the effort around, Major League Baseball or NFL, it goes beyond just the product that's on the field, but it's the experience that you have when you're in the stadium. And it's, the lights and the music and the cheerleaders and dancers and the concessions, the whole, it's the whole experience. And it has to go beyond what's going on the field, or they can't justify the prices that they charge because they're just astronomical. So I think that I've never really thought about that in the, any time I've thought about what we can do to make racing better and to get more eyes on racing, it does tend to go back to the gambling side of it, and to think about that, what we can do outside of the gambling is very, very interesting, and I'm going to give that some serious thought. I like that perspective.
Yeah, because I've always like sports betting wasn't big, or that I know of in the United States a few years ago, and these
It was just all done illegally.
exactly it was done illegally, but I don't think it was big. I don't think the NBA, the NFL, or these big leagues, or these big teams, they relied on gambling for a source of revenue. So I feel like if we can try to not eliminate gambling, but try to say, okay, if we didn't have gambling and horse racing, what would be our main source of revenue? How could we provide revenue for horse racing? How can we provide entertainment at the track? And how can we get our fans just more involved? Just want them to come to the races, not to gamble, but to just have a good time. Think of it as an entertainment.
Think of it as the party.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, very cool. I like that. So anything you'd like to part with? I mean, we've certainly appreciated the time. Anything that I didn't ask that I needed to ask you?
I'm not sure. I don't think so. It was a pleasure on here. Pleasure speaking to you.
I do sincerely appreciate the time. I know, right in the middle of or you as we're getting ready to kick off racing there, and you got a lot of work you got to do, so taking an hour out of the day with us is greatly, greatly appreciated. And thank you for doing the video when Dave was up there for the Belmont the what was the Saratoga Festival, Belmont Festival at Saratoga, whatever it was called. And
Yeah.
I know it's been like Patty said, it's been very, very well received. So I expect this podcast will be very well received as well. And just can't appreciate your time enough. And hey, I look forward to hopefully getting to meet you in person this weekend.
Yeah, I'll surely meet you on Saturday. Good luck.
Very good. And good luck to you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Patty, gonna wrap things up for us?
Thanks everybody for tuning in this week. Like Jared said, thank you Romero for joining us. I know you're busy, and we always appreciate when jockeys and agents and trainers take time out of their busy days to come sit down and talk to us. So we greatly appreciate that you took time for us today. We also appreciate everybody's support. We see you guys listening to the podcast, watching the YouTube channel. We greatly appreciate all of you as well. Make sure that you are subscribed to any of our traditional social media pages, which is Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are Pocket Aces Racing under all of those. Also, make sure you're subscribed to that YouTube channel. You can watch Romero's episode on there, as well as any of the, I think we had 21 episodes in the end. I think we have well over 1,000 views at this point. So thank you all for tuning in, watching those. So make sure you're subscribed over there. Make sure you hit that bell to get the notifications when the videos go live. But as I tell everybody, have a happy Wednesday. Have a good Wednesday. Make good choices. The podcast is out.